are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Oliver O.T. Thomas, the early bird, and the entire WBOK listening audience, man. I want to thank everybody who called in, the folk who text, man, text me. Listen to Nick Aziz, man. You know, we can talk about the future, man, but the future is bright. You know, when you have young men and women like that out there who are thoughtful and always thinking. But talking about thoughtful and thinking, nobody makes you think more than Mr. Think. 504.com. Jeff Thomas, welcome back.
Thank you, brother. I'm so happy to be here. Man, it's incredible.
Man, it had to be wonderful for you as a writer and a thinker to listen to Nick. I saw you out there just like beaming, man.
Yeah, I love that young brother, man. He's inspirational. He's the future. And, you know, I think the future is bright because of young brothers like him, man. It's exciting.
Man, we got a lot of news, but the breaking news this morning was on Irish President Mike Yenny.
What is going on?
And the revelations of the meeting in the bathroom and the text between underage juvenile young boy.
Now you're
using breaking stuff, but this broke the breaking.
Yeah, it really did. It was surprising and shocking to me that this, while he's running for
during the campaign,
Paris president.
Yeah, he's so focused.
Yeah, right. I guess we can multitask, like the mayor said. But I tell you, I'm concerned because, you know, truthfully, Jefferson Parish, the last Paris president, John Young did great, but prior to him, Aaron Broussard just got out of jail. And that reflects badly upon the whole New Orleans metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have so much corruption, and that's a big part of the problem in our city. That's a big part of what's going on.
We see what happened out in St. James Parish right now.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, we got Paris presidents out the
way. D.A. Morrell.
Right.
St. Charles.
Sexual predators and money corruption. I mean, it's driving us down. And if we're going to uplift this region, uplift this city, we need to have good government, real good government, real people doing good things for serving the people.
Now we're going to get into some of those other topics, but you're one of the first people who've written and who've penned confirmation bias.
Mm.
And a lot of those biases now we're seeing an implicit bias. We're seeing a national conversation. There's some pushback from the Trumpsters and the others, and the Dukesters
about
bias. Talk about that.
Right. Well, the last time we were on, we talked about confirmation bias. Let's talk a little bit just for those listeners who weren't listening to us before, just so we can recap, catch everybody up to speed. Confirmation bias is basically wishful thinking. It is an active decision to make something the way you want it to be. So, you know,
kind of like Nick said when he was being forced, they were trying to force him to be at Jesuit.
Yeah, he had to be pro-choice or something like that. In fact, that was part of the confirmation bias.
Right.
That was part of the confirmation bias in that he was a young black boy, so, you know, his shoes weren't shining well enough, and he was pro-choice and all of those kinds of things. Whether or not he was irrelevant. Because what they were doing was confirming their bias about that young black man in their school.
Right.
And so that's what we see about confirmation bias. And then, so we'll talk about a little bit about that debate, right? It was a great debate. Mm-hmm. I think Hillary outshined Donald Trump clearly. But, you know, when they asked about the black community, Donald Trump said what? Law and order. We need law and order.
That's all we need
is law and order. And you know.
Not economic development. Not some money.
He confirmed his bias. And so listen, if you're listening to that debate and you're hearing and you're thinking that black people need to be in jail because they are, you know, unpredictable.
We need to be policed.
Criminal. Right. We need to be policed. That confirmed your bias. That's all you wanted to hear. Now, right after Donald Trump said that, Hillary Clinton talked about implicit bias. Mm-hmm. You know, now implicit bias is not an active thing that you're doing in your mind. It is part of your subconscious. It is what you think and believe.
For all those people who thought she was doing a good thing.
Exactly right. And so, you know, it deals with things that could be favorable or unfavorable assessments that you have, but they're activated involuntarily and without your awareness or intentional control. it resides deep in your subconscious, and these biases are known biases. They're different from confirmation biases. And so what is important about an implicit bias is this.
So as down as Hillary is for us, she's mm-hmm. inflicted with these stereotypes too.
Yes, she is. And so you know what else is? We all are.
All
of us are.
As
and
Nick
that's
said.
What's important. All of us are. And so, I mean, all of us get the same jittery feeling if we're walking down the street late at night and a group of four or five young black boys mm-hmm. in hoods are walking behind us. We all get that same jittery feeling. That's your implicit bias. Mm-hmm. That's because you implicitly, deep in your subconscious, mm-hmm. believe that young black men are going to do you harm.
Even if you're black.
Even if you're black. Exactly right. Even if you're black. And so that is what implicit bias is. And so we talk about how policing and mm-hmm. and so, you know, even judges, everybody who purports to be unbiased and just judging of the facts, they have to deal with these implicit biases that are part of who they are.
Hold on a second, Jeff. Mm-hmm. You know, you're saying in some cases the same thing that Nick said. Mm-hmm. In many cases, we're doing it to our own community.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
So in right. some cases, how black people view black people or devalue black people, mm-hmm. we're part of the same system, the
right.
same problem.
Right. Well, I mean, listen, this is a part of being an American. A part of being an American is white supremacy and black inferiority. That's inbred
even
in all
within
of
our
us.
Own.
Ourselves. We yeah. believe, we sincerely believe, and we saw it in our behavior, mm-hmm. white ice is colder, and we mm-hmm. sincerely believe, as Nick said, that we are undervalued, that we are of little to no value. That is a fact of life, and until people understand it, and I think most people do. Most mm-hmm. people really, truly.
Nick believes the same thing. He believes right. that there's some evolution or there's some evolving
right.
Around that. You think so, too?
Well, I think so. Listen, when I go to these, like, Tear 'em Down, NOLA, mm-hmm. March, where your boy Nick, not Nick, I'm sorry, Chuck was a beast,
Chuck,
boy,
right.
when he was out there. I mean, he was.
Free Chuck.
Boy, look, we had the free Chuck.
Chuck went to jail,
bro. Let me just, as a quick
free
aside,
Chuck.
They had this white dude who, I mean, this dude had to be a descendant of Andrew Jackson and his horse. I mean, this was a big old white mm-hmm. dude. I mean, he's 6'5", 300-some-odd pounds. But he wasn't like a flabby dude. He was a big, husky, right. muscular linebacker kind of guy. Right. And Chuck took him down, man. Right. I mean, you know.
He took down the monument. Took down the monument.
Right. And
David
so,
slew Goliath, man. Righteous
exactly
was
right.
on David's side.
Exactly right. But I'll say this. At that march, there were more white people marching than black people. You know, when we do these things, Oliver,
implicit bias within our own
right,
community.
Right. We don't think it's not. Maybe we think it's necessary. Maybe we don't have the time. Maybe we're economically disenfranchised more and don't have the opportunity to participate in these kinds of marches on a Saturday morning or was afternoon. Mm-hmm. But you know, I just think that people are growing and understanding their own mm-hmm. implicit biases. And so these implicit biases affect us in many ways. Mm-hmm. We live, as everybody knows, and you've said and I've said 100 times, you know, in the mass incarceration capital of the world. Right. And part of that is that, you know, we have police officers who are arresting young black men at an alarming clip, sometimes for very menial offenses. And I think what it results in, what this implicit bias and our confirmation bias results in, is an oppressive form of government. Government is used to oppress people. We put black men in jail and white men, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, not white men, black women mm-hmm. in jail at alarming rates.
Right.
I mean, we are destroying the black family, and that's part of it. I mean, I think that's the real ultimate.
The black female is now under higher prosecution
sure.
now
sure.
Than ever before. The statistics are showing a rising number of African-American females now
yes.
that are going through the criminal justice system.
Yes, you look at girls in schools. They're being expelled at a higher rate than black boys. Black mm-hmm. girls are being expelled at a higher rate than black boys. And, in fact, when you look at the arc, where they were versus where they are now, it's like 100 times. I mean,
right.
it's all of a sudden now they're focusing on black girls.
You said something earlier. You said that every solution for us has to be some type of law and order,
mm-hmm.
law and order,
mm-hmm.
enforcement,
mm-hmm.
tough
mm-hmm.
on crime.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the aid with all the information they have right now, that's still the implicit response.
Well, that's right. You know, listen. Let me back up a little bit and say, we have some bad guys in New Orleans mm-hmm. who need to be in jail.
Yeah.
And we need to put those bad guys in jail. That's mm-hmm. not what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about are you know, things like municipal offenses, things that are petty crimes that are nonviolent
not
crimes.
Not 28 years for a roach.
Exactly right. Exactly right. Nonviolent crimes that in most communities, because people, because of these biases, for example, implicit bias that white people are good, white cops don't even arrest white men for doing these kinds of petty crimes. Because then their implicit bias is that you're a good guy, you just made a mistake.
The two-lane fraternity where the cocaine and the drugs were found.
Sure, you just made a mistake. Yeah. So you know what? You shouldn't go to jail for this. But the implicit bias works against us in that you're black, you're a criminal, you deserve to be in jail. You're going to be in jail anyway, so you know.
And what's the new disease? It's got a kid in California suffered from
Affluenza. Yeah, that's right, exactly right. I mean, and so we make all kinds of excuses because we believe in white superiority. We believe white people are good, but the contrary is that we believe black people are bad. And so, you know, the consequences in our community, the things that happen to us are important. And so what we have to do is understand that these things are affecting the systems that we interact with. These things are affecting the government as we interact with the government. Mm-hmm. And we're going to talk a little bit about that coming up. But one of the ways it affects us, it affects government rather, is in how the policies on putting people in jail.
On
policing, right. Exactly right.
So confirmation bias and implicit bias. Mm-hmm. So what we're seeing right now, and you contend that on the national and international stage, mm-hmm. we're seeing those two things play themselves out in us versus law enforcement. We're watching that movie.
Exactly right. It's the policies that the law officers mm-hmm. use to oppress people. You know, if there was a time when, like the Department of Justice said mm-hmm. what was happening in Ferguson, we've known that to be a fact in New Orleans, that we have had policies in effect that let the police oppress the people in the city of New Orleans. I mean, these are undeniable facts. People hate to hear it, you know. When I talk to my white friends, they're like, oh, Jeff, what are you talking about? Come on, man. The police aren't oppressing people. Well, mm-hmm. they really are. They really are.
It's real. They really are.
Well, they really are. I mean, the fact is that when you just look
in
at
your comments voice.
Exactly right. They really are. Bob, let me tell you.
We're going to go to the lines. Right. I wish we had a camera. I can't wait till we have reality radio. Right. You guys should have seen you since Jeff's face. No, they really are. Line one, Lando, you're on with Jeff Thomas. Mr. Think 504.
Yeah, how's it going? I was thinking about, because I was listening to the conversation, and I was thinking about the movie Trading Places.
Mm-hmm. It might be a great example.
Yeah, that's a good example. Exactly right, yeah.
Good thinking.
I was just thinking about how, you know, they took Billy Ray and changed him up.
Right, right. And G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip.
I mean, no matter what, at the end of the day, he still had to keep it real with himself.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He tried to cash out and walk. I think that's what's going on with our population. I think I heard we represent 12% of the population in America.
About 13.7% of the population mm-hmm. in America, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, they supposedly I heard a number like we responsible for 50% of the violent crime or something.
30% of the population, 50% of America's prison population is black men. In the South, we represent maybe in some cases 30% of the population, but in southern states, it's up to 80% or 90%. Yes. The prison population is black men. Those are some of the numbers.
That's certainly true in Louisiana.
And true here in Louisiana.
That's right.
With 33% of the population, we represent up to 80% of the prison population.
Right.
So there's just no way that, you know, I guess I'm just going to say leadership. Mm-hmm. There's no way that leadership could even argue that the lack of focus on the black community directly reflects mm-hmm. our end result. And I think that's the tragedy of the whole situation, because you know, basically we've had to become conformists. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't know what it's like. We don't know what free world is like ultimately. All we know is oppression.
That's a good point. When you mm-hmm. talk to Dr. Brian Turner, Professor Turner at Tulane, Victor Sims, notable thinkers, Dr. Tony Felton Earls, our homeboy, Harvard School of Global Medicine, they actually say The condition in inner city communities is like it's like blaming a rape victim. Literally, great analogy, Lando.
One last thing about this presidential election: we have a right. We have a right to vote for somebody they. We have a right to vote for somebody that they like, but we don't have a right to vote for somebody we like without them being so critical that they can't get past the preliminary level. And that's all I want.
Wow, thank you. I think I can't wait until Nick Lazzi's, he basically sees Hillary and Trump as the same thing in many cases. He says, as different as you think they are, it's America's greatest dream was to put these two extreme candidates. Sure. That's actually the ideal.
Sure.
They're both the ideal candidates for the American system
exactly
in terms of suppression. Both. I can't wait till that article comes out.
I'm looking forward to it. You know, it makes me think about the fact that, you know, we have two systems in America. We have a political system and we have an economic system.
Right.
And politically, we had a black president, and I don't know that. In fact, statistics prove that black life has gotten worse. I mean, it's one of the things that in some areas that Donald Trump loves to point to, because you know political systems don't do much to influence economic systems.
Right.
And so until we start taking control of ourselves economically, we're going to be in this
Wow, that's
tough
a whole
spot.
Another show.
Yes.
Line two, Tony, you're on with MrThink504.com. Jeff Thomas.
Hey, I just want to chime in on implicit bias.
Yes.
A lot of people don't even understand what that is.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who learns what their specific implicit biases are and learns how to deal with them are more successful. When you look at law enforcement, implicit biases comes into three parts.
Mm-hmm.
Your implicit bias can get you killed, can get you fired, or can get you in. You can go to prison. You have to learn how to address your implicit biases, and you will see that departments across the country have to admit that they need the training.
Good point.
And so when you look at it, say, for instance, the average person has no idea what their implicit biases are because they live with them.
Mm-hmm.
There was one particular case where a state trooper was killed by an old man with a shotgun because he had a grandfather implicit biases. He looked at the old white guy as a grandfather figure, and he gave that guy every opportunity, and that guy killed him because he saw an old white man with a shotgun, and it was his implicit bias that cost him his life. Law enforcement officers can't afford to let their implicit biases get the best of them, but the average law enforcement officer doesn't understand what they are until they get training. The more I spend time, or the more you spend time with people that are opposite of you, the better you will be at seeing what your implicit biases are, because there are people have implicit biases against tall people, short people, fat people. You don't know what they are. So when it comes to law enforcement, you bring your implicit biases with you, but they can get you killed if you're in law enforcement, you don't address them.
He's 100% right, and that's
thank
that's
you, Tony.
What's
appreciate
important.
You.
That's
man.
What's important in that. You know,
thank you, Troy. Rather,
yeah, we all have these biases, every one of us, and the issue is how do these biases affect us in our day to day lives, and how does government deal with its own bias? Because, you know, while a judge is supposed to be fair and impartial, the fact is that judge who is dispensing justice is mired in the same implicit biases as every other guy, and which is you see it when you look at sentencing guidelines and you look at how black men are sentenced at alarmingly higher rates than white men.
Well, we'll go to this last call before the break. Stephen, you're on with Jeff Thomas, MrThink504.com.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. See you.
Yeah, not to get too far off the subject, because it seems like it's shifted to another way. But once you really think about it, what has the United States like truly have done for black people? I mean, there's chances where we have advanced ourselves, but for us looking towards government, the only thing that you can truly say that they somewhat have because push for it was a civil right.
Well, one thing I want to say, I hear you on that, but one thing I want to say is that one of the things about the supposed American system is that we're free and that we are able to do things ourselves, pull ourselves up our own bootstraps, those kinds of things. I think it's important that we are able, as black people, to control our own destinies, that the government should not give us handouts, that we don't need the government. But what I'm talking about is the government putting obstacles in our way. We need to remove the obstacles that government places in the way of black people. And you can define those in many ways. Some people say welfare is an obstacle.
Malcolm contended that the welfare system was just as bad as slavery.
Exactly right. And I don't disagree. And so I'm not talking about it
destroyed families. Mm-hmm.
That's right. It surely did. I'm not talking about, you know, how we should look to government to do anything for us. Far from it. Far from it. Read Think 504. Go to think504.com and you'll see what I'm talking about. I'm talking about black people controlling our own destinies. And part of that is controlling the way government deals with us. We have to push back. It's a democratic process, and particularly in the city of New Orleans, and I think this is a great time to segue, if you want, OT, particularly in the city of New Orleans, we need laws, rules, and regulations that uplift people and don't hold them back.
Well, we're gonna go to break. When we come back, man, the lights are lit up.
Right.
We're gonna continue this profound conversation about confirmation bias, implicit bias, its role in law enforcement, and everything else in
and
terms of how
about
we live.
Bail and bonding.
We'll be back with Mr. Think 504 Jeff Thomas after the break.
Listen to WBOK 1230 AM anywhere in the world. Live at www.wbok1230am.com. WBOK 1230 AM, talk radio in New Orleans.
You are now listening to the Good Morning Show on WBOK 1230 AM.
We're back. Welcome back to the Good Morning Show. Man, the lines are lit up with Mr. Think 504.
We're just
monthly
getting started.
We just got to get started.
We got a lot to talk about.
Wow. Line one, Anthony, you're on with Jeff Thomas and MrThink504.com.
Yes, good morning, Oliver. Good morning. Look, and when it comes down to policy, right, remember, I am the guy that sued Jefferson Parish for discrimination.
And won.
And won, right? Policy is, right, they'll put out the policy and tell you, you can't bring a tape recorder, a camera, a cell phone, this, that, and the other on the job, right?
Right.
Their policy, they put that out because why? The corruption that they're doing, if you bring that, you can bust them for the corruption that they're doing. So they put that
that's
out.
A good
there.
Point.
No
that.
Worker bring that on the job to catch them for what they're doing, right? Mm-hmm. That's the reason why they put those policies out. I didn't abide by those policies, right? I brought it anyway. And had I not brought it anyway, I wouldn't have been able to be in the position I'm in now, right?
Wow, very profound.
Right.
So,
that's right.
So white folks are doing this type of stuff here, putting out policies to protect themselves for the corruption that they're doing. And as far as the people with the police officer, anybody that says give police department a raise, right? Those people are have very serious problem. Why? You go out here in Gretna, right, and you go take a ride in Gretna, and you see what the police department is doing with the money that we're giving them, right? They're getting tanks. They're getting big equipment, not for the police
Gretna.
Department because of the racist police officer, right? They're getting big equipment like that to fight us, right? So every time somebody gives the police department money, right, they're buying equipment, so go ride in Gretna and see this big equipment that they're buying to fight us that's protesting. Because I was out there protesting trying to take the monuments down, right? Mm-hmm. So they use these big equipment, all this big equipment, to fight us that's standing up for our rights, right? While we're telling them, right, while you're having white folks talking about, give them more money. More money, when I was working, you have to have what they give you, evaluations every year. If you're doing the job right, they give you more money. The police department not doing that. We're not getting no benefits out of keep giving them money.
Thank you. I have one more thing to say.
I work for the pumping station, right?
Yes.
I put my life on the line every year hurricane season.
Yes, you did.
You've never heard not one person say, by me putting my life on the line, give him a raise, by me, because I put my life on the line. So why they do it for the police department?
Yeah, makes a point.
Wow, that's a good point. Thank you. Thank you, Anthony. Man, we appreciate your service, too, man. A lot of people don't know, man, you're one of the top public employees in this state for a long time, man. We appreciate what you do, good brother.
No doubt.
Thank you.
So, you know, I want to get people's opinion about this. Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking about policies, and we had an interesting.
Let's get Brother Ronald out the way. Okay. He's been holding. Okay. Brother Ronald, thank you for holding.
I don't mind holding. Good morning, thank both you. Of my heroes. They got trouble. TNT.
talk to me.
Yeah, Ron.
Calling this morning, I'm afforded the opportunity.
Yes.
You know, you talked about the president, economics, and politics.
Yes.
Well, here's a little tidbit. When the president passed what they call Obamacare, everybody made noise about it. But let me tell you what they did. They went out and got licensed for accident, life, and health. I know people sit at their house, they call themselves navigators, that the jobs were provided. Mm-hmm. I know people that was making $3,000 and $4,000 a week, but they were state of protesting against Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
The same folks that's running around here making noise
mm-hmm.
is done. I'm going back to the words of hypocrisy. The same folks that said they love God, they love this country. If you look at the prison system, the JP system, mm-hmm. you can inmate $20, you get 13, because that's owned by the former legislators and the judges and the folks in corrections. You look at the reentry, Mr. Thomas, who are the people in reentry mm-hmm. that make the money? The former wardens and the folks that does it.
Yeah.
You send supplies, they buy the commissary out of Tiger Industry. That's the same folks, the great Americans, the love of my patriotic country. But here's my news flash. None of the media has talked about it. The United Nations Council on Human Issues on Tuesday passed a resolution that the United States government must pay reparation to the former slaves of America. I just said it three times in this radio station. I had an opportunity to get it this morning. All you Google folks, Google up right now. On Tuesday, the United Nations says that America owes reparation to the slaves of America.
Yes, that's it did.
That
yes,
is economics, brother. And I hope you can look it up, Mr. Thomas. Both of you, look it up and put it out there. And this is our conversation now. And in closing, there's a funeral today. You know, Brother Mim's going to be with the young lady that was killed last week.
Yes.
We got to talk about this. We did a crime march. We're going to get a T-shirt and hankers and have a funeral today. But the question still we've asked me, when it's going to stop.
Thank you for taking my call. Thank you.
Thank you, Ron.
Please look up the United Nations report that reparations for us.
Yeah, it's a good article.
We're going to do that. Thank you, Brother Ron. Thank you.
Right. That's a great article about that. Ron brings up good points. Mm-hmm. But I'm interested in what people think about this. It was an interesting day last Monday at the City Council in the Criminal Justice Committee. Let me preface this.
And talk about what happened, what the matter was. Set it up.
Right. What happened was this. Susan Guidry put forth legislation to remove bail and bond for misdemeanor offenses and city charges. So we're only talking about municipal offenses, not state crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about all nonviolent petty crimes.
Basically, one of the first times somebody's trying to follow the Justice Department report on how fees and fines are negatively affecting communities. That's a response to that.
That's right.
The right way.
That's right. And, you know, we know this. These mm-hmm. are some facts that putting people in jail is counterintuitive mm-hmm. to hear it and say it. Putting people in jail causes more mm-hmm. crime.
Mm-hmm.
Long sentences cause crime. Mm-hmm. Jail does not work. Putting people in jail doesn't work. And why is that, you say, Jeff? Well, a couple of things happen. If you put a person in jail for a year, their life spirals out of control. Everybody knows, right? You lose your job, mm-hmm. you lose your wife, you lose family. Your house, you lose your family. Your whole life is set back. And then you're introduced to a life of criminality. In jail. Exactly right. So going to jail, while we think that what we need to do with criminals is put them in jail, it actually causes more crime. Short sentences, long sentences, it doesn't matter. Jail doesn't work. I mean,
what was Susan Guidry's bill going to do?
Right. So I'm off on a tangent, but Susan Guidry's bail addresses one particular issue, and that is if you get arrested on a municipal charge in the city of New Orleans, you may spend 3, 4, 5 days in jail.
And thousands of dollars it'll cost you.
Yeah, but because you can't afford the bond. It's a $250 to $2,500 bond. And if you can't afford that bond and you spend 3, 4, 5 days in jail, then some of those things that we just talked about can happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And we aren't making our city any better. It costs us too much money. Mm-hmm. So basically what her ordinance was going to do was going to eliminate bond and bail for anybody.
For misdemeanor.
For misdemeanor. Now, we're talking misdemeanor. We're talking about public intoxication. Yeah, right. You know, we're talking about trespassing. We're talking about the kinds of crimes that are completely nonviolent.
It kind of sounds like makes sense. Something everybody should be for.
Sure. You would think. And so I was shocked when at the city, at that committee, there were two blacks and two whites. Susan Guidry, Stacey Head, Jason Williams, Nadine Ramsey. You would think we're talking about eliminating bond. Who could be against that? Well, unfortunately.
Well, sure, every African-American leader would be against that.
Would be.
Correct, right?
Would be for that. Would be.
Would be for eliminating.
Eliminating bond. Right, yeah. Right. But, you know, strange things happened. And I tell you what.
I wasn't there. What happened?
The two white ladies, and I shouldn't talk about, and I shouldn't reduce this to race, because it's not a racial issue. Susan Guidry and Stacey Head voted to move the ordinance up so that the city council could, in fact, vote on it. And unfortunately, Jason Williams and Nadine Ramsey voted against it so that it couldn't go before the full city council, so we could have a full city council hearing so that we could vote in the city of New Orleans to decide whether or not municipal crimes only for very minor
misdemeanors
would
petty offenses
would be required to pay bond when the police arrest them.
It sounds like a no-brainer.
To me, it sounds like a no-brainer. But, you know, you had a lot of my good friends were speaking in opposition to it. Stephen Kennedy, Bishop-elect Watson, lots of people who I thought would be supporting this brought up bigger issues. And part of it was that some of this legislation was slightly defective. It allowed you.
Now, Councilmember Brassett had initiated something even before.
Correct.
Guidry, but then I think he joined on with her.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So, could continue explaining this thing to me that it doesn't make sense to me.
Right. 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 Let me tell you, I'm trying to.
I wasn't there. I understand it, but I couldn't figure it out for the world to me, sure. Because that's something it seems like everyone in our community should have easily been for.
You would think, wouldn't you? Well, you should go.
You would think.
I mean, people
you
who
would think 504,
yeah,
wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, people who spoke in favor of it were Nia Weeks, with Women with a Vision,
right.
Alfred Marshall, Stand with Dignity, Bill Quigley,
right.
retired Judge Calvin Johnson. These were all people who are respected
Calvin
in the community. Calvin Johnson, who were respected in the community, who spoke in favor of this legislation. I think personally, Jeff Thomas, Think 504, we've written articles about the fact that putting people in jail, first of all.
So what was the role of the bond industry? Because that's a powerful lobby. I mean, a lot of resources.
That's interesting, because I had a good conversation with my friend Blair Butte of Blair's Bail Bonds to get his take on it. Now, there was a couple of issues that went on in the committee hearing. First of all, they said a couple of things that couldn't be possible at the same time. One is that bail bondsmen were against this legislation because it would cut into their business. That everybody who gets arrested should have to go pay a bail to get out. But then.
Says who?
Says the people who were at this meeting. But then, at the same time, at the same meeting, people said, well, bail bondsmen don't even write these bails. They don't want to be bothered with these $35 bonds. I mean, it's not worth their time and effort and the energy. So the two can't coexist peacefully in the same space. So the bail industry, you know, I only spoke to Blair. I don't want to speak for the whole bail industry.
Right.
But my understanding is that they were against the legislation as it existed. And I'll say this about the legislation. It had some defects. And it had some issues that I had with it. Part of it is that if you get arrested one time, you write a summons, don't go to jail.
Mm-hmm.
You get arrested another time, write a summons, don't go to jail. You could be arrested 1,000 times. You may not ever go to jail. As long as you keep going to jail, going to court on the day you're summoned to go to court.
Mm-hmm.
But so that was part of the defect in the law and
yeah.
some things that could
yeah,
be fixed.
That's minor. I mean, legislation and amendments could work that out.
And I think the full council could have vetted that and worked that out.
Right.
So I'm surprised that we didn't get a chance to have this go to the full council. And I think we need to make it happen. I know Councilmember Brossette is pushing this on.
Brosette and Gidry are leading this charge.
Yeah, yeah, and he's not going to let it die.
Stacey Head is for eliminating these petty bonds and, right, and fees, right,
really,
for
cost,
minor offenders.
It costs us too much money.
It actually costs me. Yeah, I mean,
the city.
The series Unprisoned with Eve Abrams,
sure, right,
is actually proving that point.
Right.
It actually costs you more,
yes,
not only in human suffering, but in costs to, right, the system to deal with this foolishness.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And
so what do you think happened?
So, you know, I think.
Put your Think 504 on it.
Let me tell you, you know, the meeting ended. You know, this is this kind.
So African Americans, who you would think would automatically be for this because, mm-hmm, of the way our community is being penalized, mm-hmm, were actually against this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say it has to be some of the defects that were in the legislation. There were some other parts, mm-hmm, of it that were slightly alarming.
But you amend legislation through amendments. That's easy.
Correct, correct. You know, people with weapons charges would have been able to get out with just the summons. And so I think that mm-hmm, for me even, I'm kind of leery about that. But I think to stop the bill from going before the full council.
Let's have a hearing on it.
Let's have a hearing.
Let's work it out at the council meeting.
Exactly right. That's what the point is. That's why we have them. And so I'm urging the city council to take, mm-hmm, this legislation up. I'm urging the city council to understand that putting people in jail and then charging them a bond is, first of all, Bill Quigley said, is unconstitutional.
I'm urging my producer to contact Councilmember Brossette, mm-hmm, in Guidry, mm-hmm, so that we can have a show.
That would be a great show. You know, in fact, I spoke to Councilmember Brossette. He wasn't able to be here today or call in today. Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I'm working on.
Sounds like progressive legislation.
It is progressive.
Not perfect, but progressive.
Correct. And that's what we're talking about. We need the kinds of policies that deal with. Earlier, we talked about implicit bias.
Mm-hmm.
If police are putting people, arresting people because they just think they're bad people, and for the same crime, they wouldn't arrest a white guy and a white cop, then we need to have legislation in place that works against that, that stops that, mm-hmm, that counteracts the bias of an individual cop.
Now, in independent research, you know, in talking to some of the great criminal justice minds, people, Norris Henderson,
mm-hmm,
Kim Kashif, others.
Who supported this legislation.
Greg Radler, mm-hmm, people out there, Calvin Pepp, Brother William Howe, people that have, there are municipalities throughout the country who, they don't put people in jail or force them to get a bond for foolishness like that. So it's not, we wouldn't be setting a precedent.
No, in fact, states across the
country. Some courts are taking control of their own bonding and release system.
Listen to me clear. We're talking only in New Orleans about municipal charges.
Can
you imagine if we tried to do this for state charges? Well, states across the South, Texas. Georgia,
mm-hmm,
Alabama. These are not, these are red states.
Mm-hmm.
And these are states that recognize that putting people in jail, A, costs too much money, and B, is unconstitutional, putting people in jail with bonds, and C, increases crime. Putting people in jail causes more crime.
Mr. Think 504,
yes, sir.
You think we can safely say that we're not the most incarcerated place in the world because we do it right?
That's for sure. I think so.
and is it safe to say, when you talk about implicit bias and confirmation bias, I think Nicholas Aziz mm-hmm, alluded to this, and you have too.
Mm-hmm.
It's safe to say that African-American leaders in many cases and African-American people are also filled with confirmation and implicit bias.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
We see the world the same way our counterparts do.
We absolutely do. Unfortunately, yeah. You know, because we, you know, when we say that we believe white ICE is colder, that means we believe black ICE is not good.
It's not.
And so I'm hopeful that
it don't freeze the same way.
It's not as cold, man. Your drink doesn't get as cold. I think that it's important that we understand how bails affect people. We don't need people in jail. I mean, we have basically debtors' prisons. You know, two guys go get arrested. I think Council Member Guidry gave a good example. Two guys get arrested for shoplifting, and one guy is able to post the $250 bond, and one guy isn't. One guy immediately goes home, doesn't lose any sleep,
doesn't lose his job,
goes to work, doesn't lose any income. Exactly right. The other guy languishes in jail for 3 days or 4 days. Now, maybe he loses his job. Maybe not. Maybe
wife gets a new husband.
Maybe
kids
wife,
forget about it.
Listen, maybe he loses.
Dog bites him when he comes home.
Exactly right. All of those things are real, and these are the effects that the policies have on us. And so, if we have this implicit bias in government that black people need to be incarcerated, then that's the kind of policy that we have.
Jeff Thomas, just slow down a minute because okay. you're really onto something mm-hmm. that's really part of a larger puzzle. This mm-hmm. is just a smaller piece.
All right.
When you talk about the prison industrial complex, mm-hmm. economic, mm-hmm. Some of the social science, mm-hmm. The struggle of the African-American families, this may seem like a small piece, mm-hmm. But it's central to some of the dysfunction mm-hmm. that's affecting communities of color in the African-American community today. It really
exactly.
is.
Listen, I think this. I think that we need a holistic approach to this solution, to this problem. That we certainly not putting people in jail is number one, the first thing mm-hmm. we can do. But secondarily, for people who constantly are being arrested, they mm-hmm. Sometimes they have substance abuse problems. Mm-hmm. Instead of putting people in jail, we need to put them in drug treatment. You know, and we see this now with the heroin butts, as I call them. You know, crackheads, you know, go to jail. Heroin butts, now all of a sudden.
There's an opioid problem in America.
Exactly right. And so we don't need incarceration. You know, we need treatment. Right. You know, we got all of this money now for treatment because white folks are addicted to these drugs, and they're committing the same kinds of petty crimes that we're putting crackheads in jail for. Mm-hmm. And now we are diverting heroin butts, as I call them, mm-hmm. to treatment centers. And so we can afford this, too. Let me just say this to you. We can afford this. Where does the money come from? Well, part of the problem we have in New Orleans is that we have one of the most dangerous, one of the worst I'm sorry, I don't want to say that. God forgive me. We have one of the most complicated jails in the city because we have people who are in jail for murder. We have people who are in jail for attempted murder. We have people who have been convicted of these crimes.
And people in jail for jaywalking. All in the same general population.
Exactly right. Exactly.
I've never
right.
heard it put like that. I've never thought about it
exactly
like that.
Exactly right. This is really and truly one of the most complicated jails in this city. And so rather than have this complicated jail that we have to, that it's extremely difficult to manage, so difficult to manage that now the federal government has to send in people, experts and all of these kinds of things, rather than do that, we can systemically change our approach. Instead of sending people to jail, send them into
alternatives. Well, I was right there, Jeff Thomas. You just said something extremely important that happens in the term of the prison industrial complex and the culture here mm-hmm. about arresting and incarcerating. Mm-hmm. people here in this town. I think it's important. And I've never thought about it like this, the way you laid it out. Okay. But nothing good can happen from putting the jaywalker, the ticket, the guy with the roach butt,
right.
In with the rapist, the murderer, and the child molester in general right. population. That's nothing good can happen from that formula. That's what we're doing.
Only bad things happen. Only bad things happen. That is our policy.
Good point.
That's the policy of the city of New Orleans. And so rather than invest in jails, we need to invest in people. We need to have a city that uplifts people, not oppresses people. Mm-hmm. This oppressive past government that we've had, for whatever reason we've had it, we need to dismantle it. This is our city. This is our time. We need to have the policies in place that uplift people, that give people opportunities, not that oppress people.
How do we get this ordinance to come back up? Because it seems to be a step in the right direction.
Yes.
Especially when you look at the report on Ferguson, mm-hmm. that as tragic as what happened to Michael Brown was, mm-hmm. when mm-hmm. Eric Holder's department did his report, he talked about how law enforcement and policing and fines and fees, mm-hmm. Things like this are used to suppress communities of color.
Go to traffic court in New Orleans any given day. I mean, it's played out clearly mm-hmm. in front of your face. 99% of the people in traffic court are black people.
So how do we get this ordinance to come back up?
Well we have to.
Is it coming back up? Did they reschedule it?
I don't remember if they rescheduled it. I think Jared did. You always put me on the spot, but I think Councilmember Jared Brossette is reintroducing the legislation, and it's gonna come back up really soon. Mm-hmm. It's not dead. But we need to keep the pressure on people, and if people are concerned about this, if people think that it's important, that maybe I'm wrong. Maybe, OT, you know those signs?
So let me ask you this. We got a couple minutes left. Okay. Mr. Think 504, you're making me think, mm-hmm. because you think, and mm-hmm. that's a beautiful thing. What went into Jarrett Brossett's thinking? What was different about his thinking versus the other African Americans who served with him?
You put me on the spot, aren't you? Well, let me get in that water. I'm with you. I'm diving straight in. Well, I think that there were some forces that be that work behind the scene that influence.
You think that influenced politicians?
Go figure, huh? I'm gonna tell you, but it happens every day. I'm here to tell you, OT, in case you didn't know.
I wouldn't know nothing about that.
Right. Well, let me just say. I think that they were definitely. I think part of it was Susan Guidry is part of that problem, unfortunately, mm-hmm. because, you know,
was a white woman trying to do the right thing?
Let's get to what it's really about. A lot of the reason that black people were against this was because they see it as a ploy to divert funds to the Vera Institute. The Vera Institute would then, you know, they're getting $700,000 a year to be able to set bonds and determine who is eligible for bonds and who shouldn't be. This is another way to divert funds directly to the Vera Institute. And so that is why I think you had to push back from the black community.
Then let's pair the Vera Institute with an African-American institution that deals with the same thing. Let's pair them with the TCA or the Drives YMCA.
Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so, you know, I think that's what we need to overcome. We need to overcome the influence of the Vera Institute in the city of New Orleans.
So it was politics as usual.
Politics as usual. There it is. And, you know, I laid it out there. You made me tell the truth behind the scenes stuff.
You're going to write about it anyway.
Exactly right. I think that is the reason that you had those people to vote against.
Jeff Thomas, we got a minute left. I think Trump is going to get his brains beat out.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt about that. In fact, I think whatever little bit of a brain he has. I mean, he is.
I don't think it's going to be close. I think that's just for fodder. That's just for national discussion. I think he's DOA on arrival.
Let me tell you something. The national media makes more money on political advertising than they do on anything else.
Mr. 504, you promised to come back next month.
You know, I'll be here. You call me. Thank you, Jeff Thomas, for letting me come.
Let's subscribe to think504.com. We did a good job of trying to keep you up. You know the next person's going to do. He's going to make sure you're conscious. Chuck Perkins, he'll be at it again.
Right. That's right.